Hello and welcome to Into the Aether. It's a low-key video game podcast. My name is Brendan Bigley.
I'm Stephen Hilger.
That's good. Welcome to video games.
That's good. That's nice, honey.
Stephen, I want to talk to you about a game I've been playing.
Sure.
For the Nintendo Switch. It came out just the other day as of this recording, and it's called Baba Is You.
I know nothing about this other than the title, and I haven't got anything new for Switch in a while, and I was browsing what was new, and that was one of them, so I'm very curious.
Yeah, I was honestly kind of surprised, because I had never heard of this game before I started seeing reviews pop up, and people were kind of excited about it, and I was kind of surprised to see that there was a Switch game that I was excited about buying, because I thought that I wasn't going to pick up anything between Final Fantasy and Sekiro, which I think is next week or in 2 weeks.
It's next week, yeah.
Yeah.
22nd.
So I was kind of surprised that there was a game that I was interested in picking up. But Baba Is You, you don't know anything about it at all?
Nothing.
That's great. So it's a puzzle game for the Nintendo Switch Entertainment System. It is really, really, really fascinating. I always find it kind of amazing when people come up with new ideas for puzzle games.
Yeah.
I remember when The Witness came out and it was like, I just draw a line from a circle to the end of a line and like that's the puzzle. And like nobody's thought of this before. Nobody's been doing this for like millennia.
Right. Well, in that kind of environment, you know, it's.
Yeah. 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 It just like a maze, essentially, with like different mechanics stacked on top of just being a maze. Kind of interesting. And there's like hundreds of them in there. But anyway, I have a history with puzzle games in that I like them a lot. I play a lot of them. The Witness, I think, actually probably being the best example where like I really that game just sucked me right the fuck in. I was really surprised by how much I liked The Witness, and ended up getting the platinum for that, which is like the only platinum that I'm proud of achieving.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
still haven't gotten a platinum. I've been debating which game I want to do that for. Actually,
my first one was for Sly Cooper 1, which is like they just hand it to you.
Sorry, that fucked me up. I don't know why that got to me. Sly Cooper 1, huh?
They just hand it to you. It's like you go, like you see the opening cutscene and then you hit start game and it's like, here's the platinum. You did it. Great job.
That was such a villainous laugh on my part.
It was really interesting.
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Finally, the platinum is mine. Yeah. Sly Cooper 1.
I really think you just get the platinum for like playing through the game. It's not even like collecting all the stuff.
They're definitely like, I think actually Marvel's Spider-Man for that came out last year.
Yeah.
That's a pretty, like, I don't want to say easy game to platinum, but that's a game where, like, if you just do everything that's available, you'll get a platinum for it.
Yeah, it's more of a time investment than, like, a skill ceiling thing.
Right. I am, like, I think I have over, like, close to 60% of the achievements for Persona 5.
Oh, wow.
But I'm, like, scared what the other ones require of me. They'll probably be like, at night with a cold, talk to Sojiro. It's like, I don't know how to do this. Fight death after making coffee.
Yeah.
Like,
all right, turn the game on at 3:25 a.m. during a blood moon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell Ryuji to grow up in front of everyone.
Have you ever played Sword and Sorcery?
No, I haven't. What is that?
It was like a great indie game that came out for mobile years and years
ago. Oh, yeah. I know of it, but I haven't played it.
That was a game that literally did require you to turn the game on during a very specific cycle of the moon in real life, which was like amazing to solve one of the puzzles. And it would like check to see like if the moon was in alignment with the
game.
That's
amazing.
Yeah, it was cool.
I love that. I have a weird question because you and I both off recording talked about dreams recently.
Yeah.
Wrapping it into like completing a game, I always think of Undertale, which is a game that kind of questions how and why and what are you willing to do to complete a game.
Yeah.
In sort of a platinum sense. I may have had a dream where you told me you got past the point you're stuck in Undertale, or are you still stuck there?
That is a dream that you had.
I had a dream where you so confidently were like, yeah, I beat it, and now I'm enjoying the rest of it greatly. That was a dream.
What a wholesome good dream for you to have.
It was a wholesome good dream. And I think it was actually a vision of the future. So hang on, my friend.
Yeah, I'm filled with determination. Thank you.
Of course. So wrapping it back.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, quickly, I just want to mention The Witness is an amazing thing just while I'm thinking about it, because that game is basically just line mazes that you have to complete. And then they continue to stack mechanics on top of themselves until you get to the end of the game. And the final challenge of that game, it's literally called The Challenge, and that's how you unlock the platinum. It's randomly generated. So it's not like you can go online and like look up how to do it. It like really tests your ability to have mastered every single skill set that you've learned throughout the entire time you've been playing. So if you fuck it up, it like resets and you have to start at the beginning, and it's like a gauntlet of puzzles that you have to solve while Hall of the Mountain King is playing in the background. So it's like while you're like running through the inside of a mountain trying to solve puzzles. It's really wonderful, and I've never felt more alive than the moment that I finished it.
That's amazing. I'm happy for you. You know what's kind of weird, speaking on like platinums and achievements? I'd never thought I was an achievement guy, but I do wish the Switch had achievements. Like, I always kind of think about that when I'm playing the Switch.
I get that.
And I like when games have like in-game achievements.
Yeah, me too.
A lot. I didn't think I was a sucker for them, but I am somehow.
I'm not really an achievement person. Something about The Witness specifically was the one that made me want to like complete it.
I have a proposition for you. I know I keep changing the subject a bit. I want to hear about Baba Is You.
Yeah, sure.
But I thought it'd be fun for this year to give ourselves a challenge.
Whoa.
Do you and I, Steven, want to accept the challenge of platinuming a game before the year's end?
Whoa.
Is that something that is attainable given both our schedules and like doing this show? I think it might be a fun thing to check in on if we're having a slower week or something. Mm. If there's some weird game like Sly Cooper 1 that we seek to get a platinum for.
Yeah. So is it a specific game, or is it just we have to platinum any game?
See, that's the part I'm unclear about right now. I just got hit by like a weird like bolt of like idea there.
Yeah.
I want to say bolt of lightning, but it was too violent. So I said bolt of idea, which is my screen name. But I think it might be fun to maybe have some kind of random element to it. Definitely a game that we already have. I wouldn't want to like start fresh. But yeah, that might be something worth exploring. I don't really have, maybe I'll get back to you on it.
Yeah.
We could talk about it off the show and see if that's something that would be fun.
Yeah. Like I'd want to look through my library project and see like what I have that would be worth going after.
Yeah. Cool. I would just a stray thought there.
Yeah. No, I'm into that. That seems like the kind of thing that'd be fun to stream also, would be just like,
right. Right. It could even be like a side thing. Yeah. Okay, cool. I had to get it out. And you, listener, if that sounds like a fun thing to listen to, hopefully it is. And if not, this will never happen. This might just be like a weird moment caught on Audacity of just like, everyone, Steven had that stupid idea.
Yeah, that's how everyone's going to remember this episode.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Baba Is You. Tell me all about it.
Baba Is You. Cool game for the Nintendo Switch. It is a top-down, like, grid-based puzzle game where Baba is you, and Baba is like a little sheep or rabbit. I've seen it described as like a sheep or a rabbit. It's like a little cartoon.
I gotta look at this.
Sheep, yeah.
This reminds me of the Night in the Woods episode where I didn't know May was a cat.
Let's yes. See.
Oh yeah, I have no idea. This is way more minimalist than I thought.
Yeah. So you are like a little sheep or rabbit thing moving around a grid in an attempt to complete a puzzle, which usually involves you touching a flag. It's just basically, how can I maneuver my way around this place until I can touch the flag? It has like a very nice, like minimal, almost like kids crayon art style to it, which is, it's honestly just like very soothing to look at. And it's all like very dark, which is nice. So I like playing it at night before I go to bed, or at least it's
night mode
doing.
Puzzle game.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's nice. So the main like hook of this game, if you're just say like, okay, what is the thing? So like Fez allows you to press L2 and R2 to like rotate the entire world left and right. Okay, so that's like Fez's hook. What is the hook of Baba Is You? Essentially, Baba Is You, like the name of the game, kind of illustrates it best, where that is a rule in the game. That is a game mechanic, is that you are the sheep. Baba is you. And that rule is literally laid out as three tiles on the grid that you're playing on. So you can move that rule around. So Baba Is You will be a rule literally on the playing field. Also, flag is win will also be a rule on the playing field. And maybe like rock is push. So like I have to push a rock around. But if I move the word push, so it kind of like moves askew of the rule, rock is push, I can no longer move the rock. Like the rock is no longer able to be pushed. So just imagine... imagine a blank canvas where Baba Is You is a rule, flag is win is a rule, and rock is push is a rule, and I can't get to the flag or whatever. I can get to the rock. I could maybe move the rule flag is win and take that win tile and move it down to say rock is win. So then if I just touch the rock, I win. And basically the game kind of like unfurls onto you just a bunch of like bizarre and weird rule sets that you have to like both grapple with and then change. So you are literally like going through these levels, adapting the game mechanics to whatever you need it to be able to win.
Wow.
Okay. So here's a good example. There was one area that I was in where there was like a wall actually it was just a wall. It was just like a kind of wall around me and I couldn't really move or do anything. It was just like Baba is you was in the wall with me. And also it was like wall is stop, I think was another one of the rules. So like that means that you can't go through the wall. So what I was able to do was change it. So wall is you. So then I became the wall that was like surrounding me. And then I was able to move as this giant wall around the level until I touched the flag and then won.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And it really kind of like I've never played a game that asks you so intensely to think outside the box. Like the version of puzzle game that I've played is usually like once you start to get the mechanics, like that's it. This game is like you are making the mechanics, so there really is nothing right. for you to grab onto at any given time. Like every level is its own like terrifying thing that you're gonna have to
yeah, sounds like logic problems, honestly.
Yeah,
like, you know, existential why, conditional or whatever. That yeah. sounds really fun though. I might pick that up.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I find, at least from like seeing people's reactions to it online on like Twitter and Reddit and places like that, people really seem to like hit a wall like right in the beginning. Because the first few levels you can like just fly through because it's just like kind of teaching you how to play the game. And like they're not like super easy, but they're not super hard either. I think it's like the seventh level is the one that everybody gets like really tripped up on. And it's literally just like there's two rules in the place. Three rules. There's Baba is you. There's like the makings for potentially putting a rule together that is flag is win, but you don't have the is, and like the flag and win are like askew and like you have to like push them around. And then like hedge is stop or something. So like you just kind of have to like maneuver your way around this area to make it so you can so that the wall is sorry, that Baba is you and flag is also win simultaneously with only one instance of the word is being able to be moved around. So things like that where it's like not only do you have to move like objects and like keep track of are they floating? Are they sinking? Will they kill me if I touch them? Are they stopping me from doing a thing? Does this key open this door or does a rock open a door for some reason? Because I like forgot that there was a rule in the bottom left corner that I had to keep track of and just like trying to maneuver all of those things and then understand that you can also change them at any given time. And also know what is changeable and what's not because of their placement on the map. Like in a lot of instances, they'll just have a couple rules like in the top left, like surrounded by a wall or surrounded by like skulls that kill you just so you can't touch them. Like just so those are constant rules. So, you know, like, OK, this is what's always happening. And then there's other rules on the playing field that
that's cool.
Fuck around with.
That's good that you can know what to change. So there's so many variables if you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
If I was a hedge, things would be different.
Yeah. And there are a lot of instances where you will be hedges in that game.
Hell yeah.
What's also nice is that if you pause the game, it'll show you a list of all the rules currently in effect. So you can just like go down the list and see like, okay, these are the actual things I need to be worrying about right now, which is really nice. Yeah. The game does the classic puzzle game thing where like you're going through and it's level by level by level. But every once in a while, it'll be like, okay, you did that level. Let's do it again. But we just like changed a couple things. So like actually there was a level where there was a river and I had to move some rocks to like build a bridge over the river. And like that was kind of it. And then I could go over the rocks and make it to the flag and then win. But then the second time the river was floating. So if I tried to push the rocks just went under the river and then I couldn't really do anything. And the river killed me if I touched it. So it was like, OK, what do I do here? And I'm not going to give away the answer to that one. But it's constantly testing you in both like, okay, you know how to do this already. Now do it again with like one thing that's different or like we moved a rock from one place to another, like see if you can solve it now. And the same way that you solved it last time will not work. So you're gonna have to think outside the box again when the first time like this was really hard. Now it's even harder. And then, oh, my God, here's a third version of this puzzle that's even harder than that. So it's a game that I like have only had for a couple of days, but I find myself like banging my head against the wall a lot trying to solve things. And then I'll leave and then come back like 5 hours later. And it's like, oh, wait, this was obvious the whole time. And then you just solve it in like 5 seconds, which I feel like is like the best version of a puzzle game.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so with the format of the game, is it something where like there are a finite number of levels, or does it get procedurally harder?
No, there's 200 levels apparently.
Okay, gotcha.
Wow,
and if people get stuck at 7, I can't even imagine.
Yeah,
200 is probably like, if you aren't, then why?
Yeah,
shit, you got me there, pal.
Yeah. I'm waiting for it to get like existential at some point.
Right.
I just did one.
You are the Switch. Help, I'm trapped.
I just did one. Wait, let me see if I can bring this up because I have it. I took a screenshot of it because I loved it.
Now, say what you will about no achievements on the Switch, I love the screenshot album. I have so many good pictures of King Dedede laying on his side.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
I've taken a lot of pictures of the dog in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I started a level earlier, like before we started recording, where there were 4 rules set up, and I couldn't really like move them too much. But it was literally rose is red, violet is blue, flag is win, Baba is you.
It's a little poem.
Yeah.
I like that.
And the level was called Poem. And it was basically just like, okay, I have to maneuver both. I could like move the columns of it. So it was like rose, violet, flag, and Baba were stacked on top of one another. Is stacked on top of one another. And then red, blue, win, you were stacked on top of another. So it was like 3 columns that I could fuck around with for the rules. So it was like, okay, suddenly now violet is win. And rose is you, so I could like move all the violets around and like touch the roses to win and weird shit like that.
This eventually becomes song lyrics.
Yes,
I feel like.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know that this becomes... is a hard game to describe like over audio, and I knew it was going to be before I started talking about it. But...
No, I think I'm picking up what you're putting down. It definitely is hard to like see what the puzzle looks like, but I understand the mechanics based on how you're describing
it. At the end of the day, it's just a game where you are fucking around with the rules of the game as you're playing it to best suit your needs.
That's really cool. I definitely will try it out. I think I'm going to get it.
Yeah, it's cool. I recommend
it. You sold me, all right?
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd recommend it. It is definitely very, very, very hard.
Yeah.
But they do a nice thing where like every time you unlock a level, you unlock more than one at a time. So like if you're stuck on one,
so you can
bounce and go to another one.
That's so nice. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is just about like psychologically about having even if they're both equally hard.
Yeah.
Just having like a different. I always remember weird segue, but in Resident Evil 4. There's that one branching path where you can choose to either go into one. You have to get like from point A to point B, and there are 2 major roads there.
Mm-hmm.
One is you fight 2 giants, which are like really tough enemies. And one is you fight like a long, long path full of lesser enemies.
Yes, 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 yes. I do remember this.
And like they're probably both equally hard if memory serves, but it's just giving you that option of like what you would prefer is really nice.
Yeah.
I think I did the long corridor of enemies because the giants take a lot.
I played that game, no joke, maybe 30 times through.
Resident Evil 4?
Yeah.
It's a really good one.
Yeah.
It's probably the best.
That might be the only game that I've played that many times.
I'm still on the fence about getting the Resident Evil 2 remake. I might wait until spooky season if we do that again to play that one.
Yeah, I'm thinking about getting 4 again when it comes out for Switch.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's coming out for Switch. Mm-hmm. That game will just, that's another game that will come out for everything forever,
yeah.
I think.
I think so too. Yeah. I mean, it is like, I don't know. To me, it's like the gold standard of that kind of game still to this day.
Yeah, I think it's the best Resident Evil. And I think it, like, I've said this on the show, like any game like the new God of War that has that like fixed over the shoulder camera, that's like directly from Resident Evil 4 in a good way. It's not derivative. It's just like they just figured out how to do that.
God of War and Resident Evil 4, same game. Guys,
same game.
Get your shit together, Sony Santa Monica.
I love Kratos's winter jacket.
Yeah,
I actually saw that jacket. I was C2E2 is coming up, and I have friends who are big into cosplay. Mm-hmm. They're buying stuff. I was with them, and there was like at some like thrift store, and they like Leon's jacket was just on the wall, and I was like, if I could pull that off, I totally would, but I cannot, sadly.
Yes.
Yeah, Leon's jacket coming to Switch.
I guess we should take a break, huh?
Let's take a break.
Well, first, let me just say, number one, I had that jacket at one point.
Leon's jacket?
Yeah, it looked like his jacket. It wasn't like exactly his jacket, but it looked very similar, and it was good. I had it in high school. And also, Baba Is You. Definitely recommend it. Very, very cool game for Switch. I'm glad that I have it because it'll be the kind of thing that I'll get to go back to every once in a while. Like, okay, I'm sitting on the train and I'm bored and I don't know what to do and my Switch is in my backpack. Like, Baba Is You is a great game to just like kind of
that's
dip
what
into
the Into the Breach is for me.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of fits that same headspace for me as Into the Breach.
Right. Where it's sort of like a continuous thing to solve.
Yeah.
I know I have a lot of friends who have that where like every so often, like with either their family or their partner or somebody, they'll get really into like a puzzle or like, you know, just some like kind of small fixable thing, like on kind of like a routine basis. Yeah. There's something like comforting about that.
Yeah.
I had a friend who had this like giant multi-thousand piece puzzle that they like then laminated, and that was their coffee table.
Whoa.
It's kind of unreal. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's what getting a platinum with you is going to be like.
So here's what we have to do, just to kind of put objectives out into the aether, if you will.
Yeah.
That's a phrase I said previously to this show a lot, and now I can't say it anymore.
I know. Every time I say it, I'm like, oh fuck.
Oh, funny you should ask what that means. But I don't know what that was. But we should figure out what games we're doing, or assign each other games if we want to be like weird about it. And we also should set like what we do to celebrate. Like what's like other than the platinum itself, like what is the kind of like prize for doing this?
I'm into this.
So we can talk more about that off the show, and then we'll maybe if we decide that it's something that we are going to do, we'll then talk about it on the show.
Yeah. I like this. I like this a lot.
Cool. Yeah, me too. I am excited. That's the new game, the puzzle game with Steven. That was awful. Let's go to a break. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Hey Steven.
Hey.
Quick thing that I just wanted to mention about Destiny
TikTok.
2.
TikTok. I'm not made of money.
You know what? Actually, TikTok and I'm not made of money are two great things to say before I mention why I've been playing Destiny 2 again.
Okay, go ahead.
So I purchased the Destiny 2 annual pass, which is basically at this point like a subscription to Destiny, where every season it's not unlike a Fortnite battle pass for a season in a way, but in Destiny 2, you're getting like actual content. You're getting story missions and like new armor sets and new things like that. So I did not play the last one. I took a break during the last season. It was called the Black Armory. It was this like whole thing where you found like a secret society that was like kind of inspired by like, I don't know, medieval like Knights Templar kind of vibe.
That was the one that like kind of was on the extreme side of difficulty, if memory serves.
It's not super hard, but the problem was that you had to be a certain level to be able to even start it.
I see. Maybe that's what it was. Yeah.
And I just didn't have the time in my life to be able to play enough to get to the high enough level to do that. So I was like, okay, so I just paid for a year up front of a subscription to this game that I hadn't been paying for a subscription for 5 years. So like, I can't even play the thing that I bought. That kind of sucks. So
yeah.
I just was like, I think I'm done with Destiny for now. Like, I think that's it. You know, I'm not going to play the Black Armory and whatever. So they just started the next season, the second season after that. And notably, the first season that they're releasing after Bungie became an independent company after leaving Activision.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the amazing, wonderful things about this expansion is that they have now included these things that they call booster bounties or booster quests or something like that. And it's basically like, I think it's 4 or 5 bounties that you can pick up. And they all have like a little list of things. So it's like kill 10 guardians in the Crucible, which is like the PvP for those of you who don't play Destiny. Kill 10 guardians or go into a strike and get like 10 headshots and complete like 3 strikes. Go play a game of Gambit and collect 15 motes, which are like the things that you collect in Gambit. And basically, each one of those bounties will take like maybe 20 minutes to do, like max. And then when you're done with all 5 of them, you turn them all in and you are immediately a high enough light level to play both Black Armory and the new expansion. They just give you gear that levels you up immediately, which I just did. And now I'm playing Destiny 2 again. And it's great. It's really good.
That's amazing.
And I just wanted to very quickly like recommend those of you who are interested in checking out Destiny. Not only is Destiny Forsaken, which is like the big DLC and the annual pass, all on sale right now, like all 3 of them, but they now include this thing that allows you to play through the story and then do these like things that'll take like maybe an hour or 2 maximum for you to finish. And then by then you can play all the new shit. And it's all really good. It's really fun. And I'm having a great time with it again.
Is it time, Brendan, for my exo-titan who has lived in a cavern of rust for the last year and a half to come out and join you? Or will I show up to court and just basically be laughed at? Like everyone has like planets for armor and I'm like, I have a alloy exoskeleton and a Fisher-Price gun. This is good.
Yeah, I would love nothing more. I mean, I've said this multiple times on the show, but I would love nothing more than to take you through Destiny 2, especially because you just played the main story of, right? Like, of just like the base level Destiny 2.
Yeah, I just did a bit of that. And then like I got to the sort of like end game hangar area.
Yeah.
Where I danced in front of my friends for hours and they didn't respond to me. So that's kind of where my story ended.
Yeah.
I'm just getting flashbacks to like, I never got super into WoW, but I did play in high school when it was like a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And I had a group of friends who were like, oh, like, Steven, we're so happy you're playing now. Like, we'll make new characters to level up with you. And then we'll all go on adventures together. I'm talking dinosaurs. I'm talking demons. We're going to fight them all.
Yeah.
In a week, they have a new level 1000 character that is basically like God's angel that he whispers secrets of the world to. And then if they shared, it would destroy everything.
Yeah, I will say this much about Destiny 2 is that I have a character that is at the exact point that you are at right now. Like, I leveled them up through the main quest of Destiny 2, and I have not played any more past that. And I honestly see no reason to unless I'm playing with you. So I will have someone who is at your level at all times.
My tone was indicative of maybe me feeling a bit left out. Maybe that's why I haven't gotten into Destiny 2, because I'm like, I don't want to relive that. I don't want to show up and be scoffed at for my leather gear.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, it's pleather. Who's kidding who?
Yeah. I think, honestly, that you would really be into the lore and story side of Destiny, which I know is a wild thing to say about a game where, like, everybody just complained about how there was no story in the first one. But, like, where this game is at right now is, like, really, really, really fascinating. The new expansion like focuses on this dude named the Drifter, who is the guy that runs Gambit, which is like the new PvE plus PvP mode that exists in the game. And it's all about like, where did he come from? He's talking to the Nine, which are like the nine like spectral, almost like Lovecraftian gods that like just basically poop out exotic shit for you to pick up and like fuck around with. You ever meet Xur in Destiny?
God, no. I did not meet Xur.
Okay, so
I just know so strongly that I did not meet Xur.
Yeah, Xur is this guy or thing or whatever that shows up on Fridays and Saturdays on a random planet, and he just sits there and he'll like peddle you exotics basically that he gets gifted from the Nine, which are like these nine gods.
So he's like the KK Slider of Destiny.
In a way, yeah. It
shows up on Friday night with some tunes and gear for you to enjoy.
Basically. He's called the Emissary of the Nine. And they're like starting to lean into like who the Nine are and like how you interact with them. And now the Nine are talking to you and they deem you worthy of something, but you don't know of what. And it's like...
That's like Elder Scrolls by the Nine Divine.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Although in Skyrim it was eight because the Thalmor outlawed worship of Talos.
Of Talos, yeah, yeah.
Because in the beginning, when the guy's getting his head cut off, they're like, by the eight divine. Then he goes like, by Talos, like, shut up and get it over with.
Yeah.
I've seen that so many times.
Yeah, me too.
Everyone has like, our last thought on this earth is going to be like the opening scene of Skyrim where the guy goes, for the love of Talos, shut up and get it over with.
Have you seen that? That's like a meme. That's like a thing now. Is like you'll be watching a clip and then it'll like fade to white and then it'll fade back into you sitting in the cart in the beginning of Skyrim. Oh, you're finally awake.
I was sweet on a girl from Helgen.
Yes, yeah, that whole scene.
That's a good intro.
It is a good intro.
Anyway,
I just wanted to quickly put the recommendation out for Destiny 2 now that they have those booster things in there, so you don't feel like you're wasting all your time playing it like I did for weeks and weeks and weeks doing like the five or six things that I could do to maybe get better gear to level me up. Now I am at the level that I need to be at to be playing the game and enjoying it again, and I think I'll have fun
playing with you. I feel like you got one of your genie's wishes for me to get into Apex Legends. I feel like it's going to take two to get me into Destiny 2 again.
Yeah.
Actually, weirdly enough, Destiny 2 is more up my alley than Apex Legends is, like on a surface level, yeah. I think. Because you said, like, there is a element of Destiny 2 where it's just sort of, like, experiencing, like, the visual storytelling of the world. Mm-hmm. Even though if the main plot is kind of like, there is a bad guy, look out. The world is interesting.
Yeah.
Which I'm into.
Yeah, and honestly, it's a little bit less of that now, too. Like, you jumping back in, you would get to play Forsaken, which is, like, the big DLC, and that one is, we talked about it when it came out, but that one is, like, just straight up Kill Bill, and then it ends in Lord of the Rings. Like,
yeah,
it's a Western until it's Lord of the Rings, which is, like, fucking bizarre. And then the Black Armory is basically just, like, the Last Crusade Indiana Jones, essentially, like, looking for these big iron forges to make weapons. And there's like a weird mob boss element to it for some reason also. And now this thing is like a weird Matthew McConaughey guy is being talked to by 9 Lovecraftian gods. Like, it's really fucking cool.
Now I'm in.
Yes.
That's what I've been waiting for.
Yes.
Cool. I'll check it out. That sounds great.
Destiny 2. I just wanted to recommend
I just want, I feel like our white whale is us both playing Destiny and talking about it. Cause like, I feel like I'm like at a fireside chat with you talking about Destiny on the radio. I'm like, oh, that sounds wonderful. Yeah. Anyway, Persona 5 and Final Fantasy 1 yeah. are great.
Destiny is a game I try to not bring up on this podcast as much as I do, but every once in a while they do stuff like this that makes me want to.
That was not for me. That was not for you to feel bad, because I honestly love hearing about it.
No, I don't think it's funny. Bad because of what you're saying. I feel bad because of what I'm saying, which is anything about Destiny 2.
Wow. All right. Well, you want to go back into the main canon show?
Yes.
Out of this fan fiction?
Yeah, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye break.
Brendan, we're back.
Oh,
yeah, let's do it.
Oh, shit. I'm startled.
I have something to confess.
Whoa.
So we have talked about Breath of the Wild a lot on this show, both like in passing and like as a main thing. I don't know if we've ever had like a full segment or episode about it, ironically.
Yeah, I don't know. I think one of the like deleted not real episodes was about it when you got a Switch.
Yeah, maybe. But my experience playing Breath of the Wild was my roommate had a Wii U. This is before I had a Switch. So yeah. Like when the game came out in 2017, my roommate had a Wii U. We got it for the Wii U. I made my own save file because I had to. Mm-hmm. Loved it and was like having the best time with it. And then his Wii U stopped working.
Rest in peace.
As soon as the Wii U was getting somewhere, it was like, nope.
Yeah.
Too close to the sun. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. So that was a bummer. And I was like, well, I don't know if I'm ready to like buy a Switch just for one game yet.
Yeah.
You know, this was BC era into the Aether timeline. Before Brendan, BB era.
Oh, Brendan Bigley.
Your initials, coincidence? Anyway.
Da-na-na-na.
So then I finally got a Switch last year, summer of last year. And that's when we started the show. And I kind of, you know, I've never played anything or talked about anything on this show that I wouldn't have purchased otherwise. But there was kind of an incentive to not just talk about Zelda for like the first 30 episodes, which I easily could have done.
Yeah.
So I played Zelda a lot, but then kind of got into other games that were coming out, like Octopath Traveler, like all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So I never really had like the big block of time to play Breath of the Wild that I wanted to.
Yeah.
Despite feeling so strongly about the game. So after last year, we both kind of made a bit of our backlog, and in my backlog, I wrote like, I don't really think that Breath of the Wild is a game that one needs to beat. If anything, the one point of criticism I've heard about it is that like when you finally show up to fight Ganon, if you've done everything, he's kind of a like walk in the park. Mm. There's not really much of an event there.
Yeah.
It's way more about being in the world and everything.
Absolutely.
But I say all that because I'm finally in this kind of slower period able to be playing Breath of the Wild ambiently as I've been wanting to.
Yeah.
And I'm having the best time and I'm doing things that are a little bit different than I normally do. So when I first played the game, all I did was catch horses. All I did was was cook and raise horses. I was basically not even a hero. I was just like a stable farmhand
yeah.
at that point. I made a really good big hearty radish stew and I had 3 horses named after like surfers or something.
Yeah.
Or like skateboarders. I don't remember their names. I don't know if I know any professional surfers actually, now that I say that out loud. Kelly Slater, that was one of the horses.
Yeah.
Chad Muska, Bob Burnquist. Mm-hmm.
Tom Clancy.
No, their names were like very just generic. Like I like giving fantasy creatures and characters very like default names like Greg or like, you know, Robert Maxwell.
I do that in Pokemon a lot now that you've gotten me into naming all my Pokemon. Yeah.
The hint of making any generic name into a fantasy name is just changing like one letter, like Will with one L.
Yeah.
To, ooh, that's a wizard.
Yeah.
You went from being a clerk to a wizard.
From Greg to Greg.
What's your fantasy name, Brendan, if you have to change one thing? How about Brendin? Like
D-I-N.
Like with an I. Yeah, D-I-N.
Ooh,
Brendin.
I like that. Or make them both eyes. Make both the vowels eyes. Brendan.
Brendan. Oh my God. Yeah, that you're a wizard. What's mine? Steven? Steven? Sven? Cut to the chase? Get rid of every letter.
Oh, get rid of the T.
Seven.
Seven.
Seven. I haven't seen a Smith of this make since Seven, but we haven't seen him in years. Anyway, Breath of the Wild. So I did horses and cooking, and then when I got it for myself, I started doing like the legendary beasts and doing shrines and kind of just like exploring and all that. We've talked about the game so much about kind of being the new blueprint of what an open world RPG means.
Yeah.
I think very much that game follows in Skyrim's footsteps of really kind of opening people's minds to a game that is beyond what you've normally experienced. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, Breath of the Wild does feel very purposeful. Like everything in the world feels like it's there for a reason. Whereas games like Skyrim, you sometimes run into like, oh, this is kind of just like a... Skyrim sometimes feels like a bunch of parts were thrown in.
Skyrim almost feels too real in a lot of instances in terms of its world design, in that everything seems random, whereas Breath of the Wild is kind of meticulous in its placement of like points of interest, where like you go over any hill and you're gonna see like a building or a tree or like just a weird thing that you want to go check out, and that is very purposeful and intentional design.
Right, exactly. And I think that's what kind of keeps it feeling like Zelda, because that is like, it's almost like the world map is like one big dungeon in a weird way. Mm-hmm. But I say all this because I'm finally doing the Forgotten Memories. That's something that I put off for a long time.
Yeah. Can you explain what those are, just to give people a background in case they haven't checked
it out? Yeah, and just to kind of like do a quick brush over Breath of the Wild. I figure if you're listening to episode 33 of this show, you probably are familiar with it in some way. Mm-hmm. But in case you're not, Breath of the Wild opens with Link in a pretty like distant future where the last battle he was in 100 years ago went awfully wrong. Like everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And he's waking up 100 years later, basically like cryogenically frozen in like a Zelda fantasy way.
Yeah.
And he finds a Sheikah tablet with Zelda's memories like ingrained in it. A Sheikah tablet looks suspiciously like a Nintendo Switch, but I digress.
Yeah. That was the thing I kept saying as soon as they announced this game and they were like, you have this thing called the Sheikah tablet. It was before they announced the Nintendo Switch. And I was like, that's what the Switch looks like. It's just going to be a tablet.
Yeah. It's a magic switch. And Zelda's like, Link, I've been fighting Ganon for 100 years by myself. Like TikTok. Talking about TikTok. It's like, help me. Which I like this game. I'll get more into Zelda, but I really like Zelda's characterization in this game. And like just implies how powerful Zelda is that she fought Ganon alone, is fighting Ganon alone after 100 years and is still like holding this by a thread. That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
So you're given this tablet and they kind of, you walk out of this cave and you see what is ostensibly an open world. You meet like an old guy with a stick who teaches you to cook an apple. You find like a pot lid for a shield and like a tree branch for a sword. You have nothing. Like you really have a sense that you are starting from like wearing khaki pants and fighting with a stick to eventually becoming what you were.
Yeah.
And that's the whole game. I mean, brilliantly, the beginning area of the Great Plateau, you meet this old man, you learn like the basics of finding stuff, you learn quickly how often things break and how much you have to constantly be looking for new things to build yourself up. And then you learn that the area you're in is actually kind of enclosed and you can't get out until you get all your basic items that you will use throughout the rest of the game. So unlike other Zeldas where usually it's like one temple around one item, you get all of them right away. And then you're able to leave. You find out he's the king of Hyrule and he's like, go talk to Impa.
Yeah.
From that point, the game doesn't really give you any concrete direction. So you really can. I've heard some people play this game. They kind of get overwhelmed. They're like, I don't know where to go. When I go to Hyrule Castle, these like robots kill me instantly. Yeah. I don't know like what I have to do.
But you could go to Impa.
And that's,
you know, it's either you could go to Impa and have that direction. They also give you the defeat Ganon prompt, I think, at that point, which does kind of inch some people closer to going there and then getting absolutely destroyed. And like
that's the thing. That's like, it's like you can fight Ganon
or not, I guess, is the game design aspect there.
It's kind of like Dark Souls where like you can theoretically go to certain places right away, but the game strongly.
Right. You can go fight the two skeletons right next to the bonfire, but you're not supposed to.
Right.
Yeah.
But the game still lets you. So like you're going to learn from failure, which is also a big thing.
Or you can do what I did, which is go climb every single tower in the whole game and unlock the entire map before you do anything else.
But the game gives you a direction of talking to Impa, which you'll end up doing. Yeah. She basically tells you the setup of the story of like everyone's kind of either been waiting for you or forgot about you. But the world as we know it is destroyed. There's very little left. It's still a beautiful game, but there really is like very little of society left. There's like a couple towns. There are a few towns, but like as you play it, you get a stronger sense of what has been lost.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that the game is still so beautiful despite that. Because usually when we think of like a post-apocalypse game, it's like Fallout or something. Mm-hmm. Not like Princess Mononoke, beautiful nature kind of stuff. Yeah. So you talk to Impa and she says like what would really help against the fight against Ganon is if you were to awaken these four legendary beasts, these mechs essentially that
these Gundams
that were created, these Gundams that were these Beast Wars robots that were created. It's much cooler than Beast Wars. Beast Wars sucks, just for the record.
Wow. Hot takes. I can't believe you said
hot
that.
Hot take. I loved publicly. It as a kid. I never got it. Whatever. That's such a tangent. Stop me. All those animals, those legendary beasts, were all created to fight Ganon. Mm-hmm. And they were all piloted by Link's close adversaries, kind of like an Avengers team of people that represented all the different factions of Hyrule. And they all died. They all like got they all got killed, and all the legendary beasts they were piloting got possessed by Ganon and are now just kind of like harming the world, basically.
Yeah, in their own special ways.
So the Impa's like, the two main things are get those beasts back on our side by awakening the spirits that lie within them. And if you can, here's an album of pictures that you took at one point. Go to all those places and find your memories.
Right. Like going to those places and like being there and lining up the picture that you took with the place that you visited might jog your memory and might remind you of something.
Right. So the main, if you want to say there's like a main A plot, it is the legendary beast. That's the part of the game that feels the most like Zelda.
Yeah.
And you're going to get most of the plot from that. You're going to meet all the pilots who Link had like different relationships with. I've actually only done the bird and the elephant.
Oh.
So with the elephant, you meet Prince Sidon, who's the greatest character in fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the older brother of Princess Mipha is her name. She's someone who has a very close relationship with Link. And there's kind of like, they hint at like an unrequited love thing, which is really sad, especially because she like is gone.
Yeah.
You get a power from her where if you die, she revives you. And I also have Revali of the bird, who's kind of like your rival. He's kind of mean to you. Mm-hmm. He's very arrogant. He's kind of like the Falco, like in many ways.
He even looks like Falco. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like a rival bird. Like, hey, Einstein, I'm on yours. Yeah, exactly. And he lets you jump really high. So all that aside, that's all stuff I'm familiar with when I think of Breath of the Wild. And it's very well done and beautiful. But I'm finally doing the Forgotten Memories, which is hard to do right away because at that point in the game, you do not have any kind of recollection of the areas. Like all you have to go on is the pictures.
Yeah.
And then you yourself have to remember where that was taken. Mm-hmm. And then once you're there, you see like a glowing thing on the ground and you can recall the memories.
Yeah.
Those moments are so well done. And I think that doesn't get enough credit when people talk about this game. Because just like this sort of mechanics of you, the whole game is about kind of reclaiming what was lost and building it back up. You build yourself back up.
Yeah.
You build the world back up. And there's a sense of awakening around you. As you get these memories back, like you also, it makes you, it gives you the strongest sense of what's been lost. And there's this constant recurring thing of the characters not believing in Link and being like, he's not ready for this. Mm-hmm. Like Zelda kind of has a heavy sigh when she's doing the like traditional like blessing of the hero, and all the allies are like in the back kind of talking like, I don't know if this guy has what it takes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really human moments of doubt and a lot of really like quiet moments that are so effective in giving all of the worlds a sense of personal investment.
That's what I found so surprising about those memories. Specific, like the cutscenes that you cut to are very frequently literally just like, here's Link and Zelda hanging out like on this field, just like admiring the view, because like life is great because Ganon's not there. You know, it's like the two of them just hanging out. And like, that's the memory. And then you sit there, it's like, okay, what does that mean? Why did I see that? And it is literally just to endear you to what you are fighting for, you know?
And that's just it. Cause like so many, I've often talked on this show about games like Persona and like Final Fantasy, like Mass Effect or Undertale, where those RPGs are rooted in a sense of you are getting to know the characters on such a intimate level that by the end of the game, you really feel like you've met real people.
Yeah.
And the game stakes are not the world or the universe, but it's saving them.
Right.
And it's so effective. The thing about Breath of the Wild is that you're getting that too, but you've already lost them. And it is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Like when you're finally getting to know all these characters and to getting to know your place in the world and it's already gone.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of has the sense of, I brought up in an older episode, Final Fantasy VI, where like halfway through the game, the villain wins and the rest of the game is rallying your crew to like, there's still something left to fight for. Yeah. And that's, I mean, the state of the world in Final Fantasy VI is a lot more nightmarish than it is in Breath of the Wild, but there's still that sense of scale of what was lost. And I think that playing this game now with getting the memories back, I have such more emotional investment in the story.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something easy to miss when you're playing this game. I don't know if everyone prioritizes getting those. I would highly recommend doing that once you kind of have more of the map opened up.
Yeah. And it's not even just when you have most of the map opened up, but it's like when you know the place well enough, like when, once you've not only like unlocked all of the map, but once you've seen enough of it that you can very viscerally, like as you playing the game, start to remember these places. That's when Link starts to remember them too. And Link, I hate to use the word Link, but linking your physical memory and recollection of the map you've been traversing with Link's memory of the world that he lives in is really brilliant. And I also, not to say that everything needs to follow the 12-step hero's journey shit, but like this game starts with the second step of the hero's journey, which is the call to adventure, because you literally just wake up and then you're doing a thing. So you never get that step one, which is here's the protagonist living in the ordinary world. And that's what the memories allow you to do, is to see what that was like at one point.
Yeah. And I think it's also just mechanically brilliant to have the story be something you find. I mean, just like collecting backpacks in Spider-Man gives you a little bit of flavor here and there of like his history and his character. This is like a much more in-depth version of that where you're incentivized to explore and to get things. I think it's just so nice to be like, okay, you might find some rubies and a cool sword and some cool outfits, but you're also going to find like a really rich moment of the plot.
Yeah.
Almost as a collectible in a weird way. Because so much of awakening the beast and finding stuff and getting the Master Sword, which made me cry, is about making it easier for you as a player.
Yeah.
And those memories almost make it harder for you and Link because it fills you with doubt.
Yeah.
It makes you a lot more invested in Zelda's safety because she's still fighting Ganon after all this time. Mm-hmm. And if there's any character that kind of you are rooting for out of all of them, it is Zelda. Like she's the most kind of developed, I think, and given the most time in those moments. Yeah. Link is still a silent protagonist, thankfully. And it's actually interesting that it's the first time that there is voice acting in Zelda. I'm glad they do the thing where there's only voice acting in those big moments to help them stand out.
Yeah.
And then normally when you're walking around, there's still the like, huh? You know, and then you see the text, which I think is the way to do it. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. But I this is probably old hat, and like a lot of people listening might be like, well, yeah, Breath of the Wild's great. It's kind of like being like, you know, it's a cool new band, the Beatles. Aren't they good and interesting? Isn't Jimi Hendrix talented? But I don't know, man. I just think I think that the Forgotten Memories add a whole other layer to that game that could easily be ignored because it is kind of unintuitive to find them until you know the map.
Yeah.
And also getting them in and out of order is a really interesting thing too, because you might not, I mean, you can do it where you get them as they happen, but I almost think it's more effective to get them just as you find them.
Yeah.
And I'm just having the best time with that game. I think that that game is, we could just have another show talking about Breath of the Wild and Zelda because I'm such a huge fan.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I would love to just talk about Tarrytown and what that quest meant to me for like the rest of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. The Tarrytown theme is one of my favorite songs.
Have you done that quest line? Have you finished that yet?
I haven't, but I just know of it. That's the thing. It's like, I just need to do everything this game has to offer because it's slowly becoming one of my top five favorite games like ever.
Yeah.
Not to be like high fidelity about it, but when I think about the games that I love, like this is really high for me. This kind of embodies a lot of the things we talk about on this show and what we look for in games, like games as a vibe, games letting you play them any way you want to, having the story and the gameplay kind of mesh together thematically and mechanically. Yep. But yeah, it's just the best. It's just one of the best things ever.
Yeah, I think what I would push onto you is go out and seek the Tarrytown quest and play it to completion. Because no, for real, like that, I heard also around when the game came out, like the Ganon fight does not really live up to what you're hoping for if you've done all the divine beasts, and it'll be a little bit too easy and the ending is not going to be super satisfying. So like knowing that, I kind of avoided it at all costs.
Yeah,
I still haven't done all the Divine Beasts. I still haven't done the Death Mountain one, the like gecko climbing all over the volcano.
Goron,
I have yet to do that one, and I haven't gone and fought Ganon. But what I have done is gotten all the memories. I went and unlocked all of the towers and the whole map. I started seeking out all the DLC items and treasure things, which unlock like Xant's hat from Twilight Princess and Midna's thing and like the Dark Link outfit and stuff like that, like, which is a cool, weird Indiana Jones thing. But at the end of the day, like the thing that really stuck with me was Tarrytown. And I think there is no better thematic ending to that game, honestly, than the end of the Tarrytown quest.
Yeah, I've heard of that actually.
It is a better ending than the Ganon ending, which I haven't played again, but it feels like it almost is the answer to exactly what you like about the memories. And I don't want to say anything else beyond that, but I think you should seek it out and you should do it. And it'll bring you a lot of joy.
Yeah, I and it's interesting that we're talking about this game now and I'm like talking about games to platinum. Like, I feel like this is the one. Like, there isn't the official like achievement, but this is a game where I truly do want to experience everything in it.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's a beautiful thing. And actually, just for the record, if we want to talk about like the best showdowns with Ganon, I honestly think Twilight Princess has the best one.
Oh, it's unreal, yeah.
You fight him as a wolf on horseback and then like hand to hand and then he dies standing up.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, it's just like, I don't know why that's like my favorite thing ever. He's just like, of course, Ganondorf would die like, oh, ow, my chest.
Yeah.
I'll keep standing. You know. But yeah, I know this kind of slowly turned into me gushing again, but
that's what the show is.
If you have Breath of the Wild and you're kind of like, because this is another game too where I actually have a lot of friends who are maybe newer to video games or newer to the series and like are a little bit overwhelmed with options. It's like going to a diner and being like, I don't even know, an omelet, a burger, like, it's too much. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. I think that really play that game any way you want to. I think that's really where it shines is like, you can truly, I mean, I had a blast raising horses for a bit. Like that was how I played that
game.
And
I tamed the horse that they make you tame for the tutorial and then did not touch a horse for the rest of the game because I liked running around that world.
That's kind of why I'm not as into horses this time, because one, I'm too worried about their well-being, and two, I am like, once I got Revali's Gale, like I don't need a horse.
Yeah.
I can literally fly. Yeah, so right. At least three times a day before it recharges. But yeah, Revali's kind of a dick, but I do like him. I really like the old owl that runs the Rito village. He fucking rules. I love him.
Yeah.
And I think one of my favorite Zelda characters, kind of like the Feywild positive reflection of the organ grinder guy from Ocarina, is the bird bard Cass with the accordion.
Yep.
I love them. They're so cool.
Yeah.
There's just so much of this game to really love. I'm really happy I'm finally doing it. I got the Master Sword. I'm getting my memories back. I got two beasts done. I'm definitely going to get the DLC, so I'll probably talk about that eventually because I would love to revisit it. We will talk about this game again, but I wanted just to highlight the memories because I didn't realize how like special they were and how like good, like this is a series that talk about, you know, when you're saying with Destiny, how like the story maybe isn't that well executed, but the world and the lore is so rich. And that's always been Zelda with some exceptions here or there. Like it's never been like especially great writing, but the world is so rich and the themes there are so powerful. Yeah. Like Ocarina really cemented that. They kind of explored a weird like David Lynch hell with Majora's Mask. Mm-hmm. Wind Waker, I think, was the first game that actually had really clever writing and really great characterizations of both Link and Zelda. Yeah. I've really liked Wind Waker. That's why it's one of my favorites. And Breath of the Wild is just like that times 10. Yeah. Like, they really doubled down on it. So the future of Zelda, like honestly, we've talked about this in passing, but I feel like they could just use this engine and put it in a different world and do this like, not to say they do the same thing, but like do the same thing as literally like cast, like have lightning strike again.
Yeah.
Cause it's amazing.
Yeah.
I wonder if they could do a different thing where maybe like rather than having the shrines, it's like a different way to level up or something.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see if they end up doing it, because I think that's kind of what everyone wants. Like everyone wants just like Breath of the Wild 2 essentially.
Yeah.
The main complaints that people really had were just like the weapons break too frequently and the divine beasts aren't as good as dungeons. So like, okay, fix those two things and maybe that'll work. But you're right. Like there's so much extra stuff beyond that. That is what makes Breath of the Wild special. It is the memories and it is the world and the soundtrack. And I don't know, it would be hard to make that game successful just by using the same engine and like changing those two things about it.
Yeah, I think so. But I think that like the Zelda franchise as like, of all the Nintendo IPs, like that's the one that is always kind of reworking what we think is magical in a way.
Yeah.
With the exception, as we always say, of maybe Skyward Sword, like they have always felt really new and fresh and exciting. And I'm just looking forward to what is next. But there's so much in this game. Like I also feel like even before we would get a sequel, because we're getting the remake of Link's Awakening.
Yeah.
So like, that's the new Zelda, which just feels a little bit like that's really cool and exciting, but that's almost like, okay, this is like for now kind of
thing. Yeah, it's a hold you over.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's maybe just like another big add-on to Breath of the Wild before there's like a full new one, if that makes sense.
It'd be interesting.
That's a separate conversation. In short, if you like Breath of the Wild and you haven't done the memories, do it. If you are new to the game and don't really know like what makes Zelda special, absolutely do it.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that like the shrines are fun, all the puzzles are fun, but like the story is really in those little quiet moments that you find across the map.
Yeah.
Cannot get enough. And I still haven't gotten all of them, so I'm excited to see more of them.
Yeah. And I have a friend, a close friend, who basically only plays this game and Stardew Valley, and those are the two games that she plays. And she has played enough of Breath of the Wild where at this point, like I would consider her like the master of Hyrule, and like she has lived out every single thing that you can do in this game and still goes back to it and keeps playing it and like looking for Koroks.
It's interesting because those are oddly similar games in a way.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I mean, I think that's another game where like investing in the townspeople and like getting to know their stories is like secretly where the heart of that game is, you know, like, You have the crop economy and like you have the dungeon crawling and the cave. There's a lot of you could also play that game any way you want to, but what keeps me like thinking about that game is like you know, talking to Alex about like his football dream. But investing in the townspeople in that game is like where the heart of the story is, as well as kind of playing it any way you want to.
Yeah.
So both great games. Honestly, a really good choice. If those are going to be your two,
yeah,
that's probably what I would recommend as well. Maybe mine would probably be like Katamari and Final Fantasy IX. It's a little bit more chaotic.
Yeah.
But yeah, Breath of the Wild rules.
Mine is
so do the Beatles, I guess.
Animal Crossing New Leaf and no other games. That's my recommendation.
Do you think, as a send-off, do you think that Animal Crossing is going to come out this year still? I'm like doubting it more and more as time progresses.
I do think it's going to come out this year.
Okay,
I think it's not going to be a summer release anymore. I think it's going to be a fall release.
That makes sense.
It's going to be like early fall, like October, November in that vicinity.
The other big, because this year the big fall releases were, well, I guess it was winter because Smash came out like the very end of the year.
Yeah.
And before that was Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee.
One thing I find, not to get too far down this rabbit hole, but one thing that I find really interesting about Animal Crossing is the time of year that they choose to release it, because the time of year that it's released is tied so much into the look of the game. And I'm wondering, so they're going to market this game to come out in the fall. So, like, the entire vibe of the game has to have, like, an autumn vibe when it comes out, you know?
Whereas New Leaf had a very spring vibe.
Right, exactly.
It had, like, a very, yeah, yeah.
And it came out in the spring, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What's your favorite season in Animal Crossing?
Fall.
Fall, yeah.
Also in real life.
Yeah, a good season.
Yes.
I like spring when it works out. I feel like sometimes it's just like dirty snow and then it's 90 degrees.
Yep.
So like a good spring rules.
Having a good spring right now.
We are. We had a fucking miserable winter in Chicago, as you know, as the news has shown
you.
But the spring so far is good. I'm into it.
Yeah. Anyway, now that we're talking about the weather, we should probably sign off.
Hey, it's pretty good out there, right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, at least it's warm. Okay. All right, at least it's not cold today. All right. You don't want to see me after my third cup of coffee. Okay. At least it's warm today. Today is Tuesday. Okay. At least it's not Monday. All right. It's colder today than it was yesterday. Fine by me. As long as I have my jacket. Okay. It's warmer today. All right.
That's my impression of bullshit small talk.
That was great.
It was like vaguely Irish, but also kind of Midwestern.
It was. It is St. Patrick's Day when we're recording too, so.
Yeah. Sorry, don't get me started.
Wow.
Nothing against the saint himself or Ireland, but everything against this, like, the stretch of bars that now is like a river of broken glass. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Anywho.
Positive stuff. Thank you. You want to do your thing?
Yeah, sure. Thanks everybody who...
I'm still in a daze after that weird, it's warmer today moment.
Yeah.
My favorite absurdist two-person play on off Broadway. It's basically in New Jersey. Just go to New Jersey and see it.
It's warmer today. thanks everybody who listened to this podcast episode.
Yes, thank you.
And who listens to this podcast in general. Especially this episode where I basically just gushed about a puzzle game that has to be described visually and can't be described over audio. And then we talked about Breath of the Wild, which is a wonderful game.
Yeah.
So thanks to those of you who made it this far. We have a Twitter account. It's @IntoTheCast, which you can check out for updates on the show. And we just retweet a bunch of things every once in a while. Are there other things that we say? Oh, yeah. If you like the show, share it with a friend. That'd be cool. If you think that other people would like this podcast, then do that. And if you really like the show, you can head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a review. That'd be great, too.
Yeah. Rate it out of 5 stars, whatever you see fit, or writing a review really does help the show reach a wider audience.
Yeah.
But thank you. We love doing the show. We love that people are listening. And we'll talk more about some of the plans I set up this one episode. It's kind of all over the place this episode. I guess it's the seasonal transition that has thrown me off.
Yeah, I tried not drinking coffee before this one, and I feel like my brain is just like kind of, I don't know. It's like Ratatouille.
I think I had too much coffee. It's like Ratatouille. My brain's like Wall-E right now, just rebuilding garbage.
My brain is Cars 2. Wow, is that the latest we've ever found the title?
My brain is Cars 2. My super ego and id, Cars 1, Cars 2, Cars 3. Thank you. I'm all about cars, baby. Yeah. Have you ever seen the Pixar timeline?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's real weird. Bug's Life is in like far into the future, and that weird, like, that fucked me up.
Yeah, Boo goes back in time through the wrong door and ends up being the old lady in Brave. Unreal.
Yeah, because the whole timeline is rooted in like Boo wanting to bring Wall-E back, basically. Sully back.
Yeah.
Wall-E back. Yeah. Sully and Wall-E. Oh, man. It's weird. It's not real, but it's funny to look at.
Uh-huh.
It's just like the Mario timeline, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Though it is interesting, just to give a final note about Zelda, that Nintendo like canonically admitted the Zelda timeline.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of wild? Because like, that was a very fringe fan theory, and then Nintendo was like, yeah, it's real. And here's a third timeline.
Right, yeah.
And that is
and here
like,
it is now printed in a book.
The third timeline is Link fails against Ganon, and like that theme is basically what Breath of the Wild is, which I think is kind of them nodding at it. But anyway, don't get me started on the Zelda timeline.
Bye-bye.
Especially when my brain is... Goodbye. See ya. Farewell.
WG, the worst garbage dot online.